My dog's in the other room. Like, my wife's at work. My dog's in the other room sucking on one of his toys and wailing. Welcome to the Toddcast, everybody.
Hello, everybody.
Oh, man.
Matinee special.
It is. It is kind of a nice matinee. I'm glad we made it work. Sorry that we had to push it to the middle of the day, guys, but I have awesome concerts to go to later today. And we didn't want to have a skip. So we're here hanging out. And, you know, I think it's going to work out. So just if you're watching this at work, please don't accidentally get yourself fired. That'd be very not good.
Ron.
Oh, happy birthday, Ron.
Is it his birthday today?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Facebook told me that today.
Huh. Happy birthday,
I'm pretty
Ron.
Sure I've already said that, but yeah. Happy birthday, Thursday Warrior.
Yes, hello, and to all our Thursday Warriors.
Oh, yeah.
I'm messing with my newest purchase.
What'd you buy this?
Ollie's had a Deadpool omnibus.
Oh, nice.
And it's all the original stuff. So like the first appearance, the X-Force stuff, the 4-issue miniseries. And it was $30.
That's not bad at all.
I was like, yes, I'll pay $30 for a $100 omnibus. So
that's awesome. So it has like the Mark Waid and the Gail Simone stuff.
I'll tell you exactly what it's got. New Mutants 98. And the 91 X-Force, it's got 211, 15, 47, 56. There's a Nomad issue, Deadpool, the Circle Chase, 1-4. The couple issues from the Secret Defenders with the just god-awful artwork. 98 or 94 Wolverine, 1-4. Heroes for Hire, a couple other things in there. So a lot of these.
Oh, nice. Like,
that's kind of
yeah.
But I was like, yeah, $30. I will definitely. So I was opening it up while we were doing that.
No, yeah, that's awesome. Very, very cool. Oh man. So, we have some NDC housekeeping. So, some crazy news that hit everyone's email today. The basement sale this coming weekend will be the last basement.
Ever. Why? Oh no.
It's man, just something we decided on. So if you ever wanted to go to a basement sale, like Saturday's your last chance.
I'm so bummed now. Ugh.
Yep.
So. I have to work on Saturday.
Mad frantic phone calls of hey, I need off.
Who wants to work Sunday? Or doesn't want to work Sunday? Yeah.
Right?
No one's going to be like, I'll switch a Saturday to Sunday.
You never know. You might find one of the guys might want to do it. Especially if you tell them why you want to go. So, yeah, make sure that you guys, you know, stop out on Saturday for last one. It starts at 8 a.m. Goes till 7 p.m. And then we also have
8 a.m. I can make it. I could do a couple hours and then go straight to work.
Right? There you go. That's the way
I might. Yeah, I might do that.
So then we also have Secret Warehouse sale coming up. November 13th and 14th. 12 to 7 on the 13th, 12 to 5 on the 14th. That's at our giant warehouse sale. We're premiering 200,000 Marvel and DC books that we have never let anybody shop. Cash only. Make sure that you know that it is not temperature controlled, so it may be cold by then. It may be okay. I'm hoping for brisk, but not cold.
Yeah.
Other than that, we still have the clearance sale going on at the Elwood City VFW for a couple more weeks. Then we have the Waterfront Anniversary Sale coming up the first Saturday of November or October.
Yeah, October 2nd.
Yep. And then, oh, man. Oh, we're also going to be at Harrisburg this weekend if you're down in the Harrisburg way and you want to hang out with Todd. Then, or ask him why that was the last basic sale. And then
plead.
Yeah. I'm actually going to see him tonight. He just texted me with, how many people do you think are going to ask me, please don't do that. And I said, by the time I see you tonight, 25, because no one reads their email. So, yeah. But I would say, or then so after Harrisburg, we're going to be at, well, we're supposed to be at Pittsburgh Retro Gaming, but I haven't quite figured that out yet. We're going to hopefully have a little bit of a table there. And then we're going to be at Sci-Fi in the Valley in Altoona. And then our Three Rivers Comic Con Light. And we did the official announcement for Sammy Castillo today. She's awesome. Her and Tommy's art was featured on a lot of stuff. They did work for DC. It's beautiful. It's beautiful paint. But she'll be there set up and hanging out. Other than that, I don't really think we have much else going on after that, or around then. I'm trying to think. Sorry, this doing this too early is messing with me. I'm like not quite awake yet. I did a concert last night. I'm going to a concert tonight and tomorrow. So my whole week is just like
super. I don't think you missed anything. I can't think of
anything super nuts.
Yeah, you said the Con Light coming up in October, right?
Yep.
So I think you got everything.
Cool. So I guess we'll talk about some comics then.
Yeah. And then we've got, let's see, we've got a little later on, we've got the most recent episode of What If. We've got Why the Last Man.
Yeah.
I've watched the first two, so
I've watched all three.
I think I also finished the fourth is out now.
Two, so oh, is it?
Yeah, somebody told me yesterday. Yeah.
So, all right. Let's talk about some comics. You want to go first or me to go first?
Either or.
I'm going to have you go first because I don't have the right book
up. Okay. What are we doing first? Oh, Bermuda. Oh, man. This is the first time I've reviewed this book, and I kind of wish I would have reviewed the other two also, just so maybe a couple more people would pick this up, because it's awesome. It's a lot of fun. It's got like this kind of Peter Pan kind of vibe to it. But the setup is basically that this character Bermuda was stranded on this island, the island of Triangle. It's not called Triangle, it's called Triangle, but I guess they're doing plays on the Bermuda Triangle. And she is I think at like the age of six, stranded there. Her family had died, and she's raised by somebody that used to be in the Navy who was also trapped there. But the way that the first issue picks up and gets to this third one is this rich guy, he has his family on a plane while he's back in the city. And they end up through this doorway, which crashes them on this island. And Bobby, who is pictured in the left there with Bermuda jumping, is trying to save his sister, who's in the center there. And these creatures are called the Murs, and they're trying to open the gateway to that everybody comes through. So every once in a while, magic will store, and there'll be enough magic that will open this doorway that allows stuff to accidentally come through and get to this island. Bobby is trying to help rescue his younger sister and meets up with this Bermuda, and they go to all kinds of cool stuff. There's a section of the island with giant spiders. Then you've got these MERS, which are kind of like island lizard creatures. There's Pirate Town. There's a spot where the Navy had a ship that crashed, and they're there. So it has like this really cool kind of like Peter Pan vibe of like this kid that doesn't really know what the world's like and grew up on this island. But there's some other like fantasy elements in it also. And it's only four issues, so it moved really quick. And the artwork's fantastic because it's Nick Bradshaw. So that makes it even better. Like if you're going to read a book that you're like, oh, I'm not sure if this story's going to be good, if it's got Nick Bradshaw in it, then it's always going to be worth reading because it's going to look gorgeous. And for four issues, I was like, oh, I'll definitely try this. And now like I'm three issues in and I'm like, oh man, there's only one issue left. Like, I hope there's going to be like a Bermuda 2 after this. But it was really fun. And now you have like the MERS is trying to open this doorway, but on the other end is her father, who is a scientist, and he's trying to open this doorway and doesn't realize that it's going to connect to his kids. And there's going to be some very bad things for the regular world if they can connect and open up this doorway that would let, you know, all these people from Bermuda get to the regular world. So really cool.
Every time you say the MERS, I think of the Impractical Jokers. I'm just like,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm just like, it's like an island of MERS.
Yeah, they kind of remind me of like the MERS. If you see other pictures, they kind of remind me of like Sleesex.
Okay.
So that's kind of like the vibe that I got. They don't really talk much, and they look really goofy and green. So it's a fun book for, you know, it's $5. So if you don't want to, you know, that's a lot for just a regular issue that's not like cardstock or, you know, super thick, right. But it's only four issues, so I think it's worth picking up. And if people didn't get it, then I would definitely suggest getting the trade, because I'm sure that'll be out before the end of the year.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I dig it. Sounds good. All right. My first book. And this is the worst book I read this week. I Am Batman, number one.
With the best covers. There's like four covers to this book that were just like, I need them for, like, there's a Francesco Mattina cover, which was just absolutely sick.
Right.
That I bought it just for the cover. But tell me about this Batman book. I've never seen a Batman book before. They don't make a lot of these.
So this is in the future where Batman's been missing for 5 years. And one of the Fox kids is now the new Batman. And this is just really trying to show how he is different than Bruce Batman. Like he wears a mask under his mask that is made with military grade biohazard filter in case a fear bomb goes off. There's a scene where like some dude's driving under the influence and he just like beats the shit out of the car and flips the car just to pull him out and yell at the guy. There's a scene where like he's dealing with kids doing graffiti and he just kind of lets them go, but he just yells at them a little bit. And then the cops are complaining that nobody likes cops anymore. And then it's just, it was very different, because it just kind of sets up, like, he's going to be more of an in-your-face, riding a motorcycle Batman who's trying to work with everybody and be there for everybody.
Yeah.
But he's, like, I feel that he's overly violent more than the original Batman, and there are, like, a lot of political overtones in this that it just kind of made me not give a shit about the book, because I'm tired of it in real life. I really want more of it.
And so, and Batman's just never really been that way. I mean, right. There's been on a small scale, like, you know, city stuff, but not on a national scale.
Yeah. So it overall, like, it was okay. I'm still more of a Bruce and Dick as Batman guy, but we'll see how it goes. Like it kind of goes back to you and I had a conversation about Titans, right? And you said you were turned off by it because the first thing you see is like Robin breaking the glass out of some dude's window and like shoving his head in the glass and sliding it across. And you were like, oh, Robin would never do that. That's kind of how I feel about how this Batman is. But it's either they're just trying to go, boom, here's this is how this guy's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's like just violent to be violent. And that's where I don't know where it is yet quite. So I want to see where it goes. So,
yeah.
But, you know, overall, I thought it was the art's really good. It's just I didn't really care for the story. So unfortunately, I feel
like there's some cool things they could have hit on too, because like, you know, if you're a Fox, then you're probably pretty good with like making things and technology, and so the idea of Batman,
like, how he updated the suit and like he made it like a third of the size that thickness that Batman's was, so he has more flexibility, but it's the same like protection.
Yeah.
And then he talked about the gloves are actually like they're graphite, so they're like super strong. Like it's real, real crazy. Like they actually go into like the suit itself, which was really nice.
That's kind of neat, because when you think of like a Fox and you think, you know, Batman's always going, hey, I have this thing that I'm trying to do. What can you make for me? So now if Batman is that guy also, you know. Yeah. He can know exactly what he needs, and he doesn't need to go to somebody else. So
right.
It feels like a missed opportunity to have something like an element like that, and then to drive it towards like something political.
Right. That's the part that I didn't like, though. But overall, I mean, it's got potential. I just don't like it when politics get too far, like. I understand getting sprinkles. I don't really need it thrown in my face, because I get it all over.
Well, and that's like, unless you're reading a book that is supposed to be that, you know, like if you're reading Undiscovered Country or, you know, something along those lines, you expect it in that book. So
yeah,
you don't really read Batman for that.
Right. So, all right, moving on. You're next. Which, by the way, when I saw this cover originally teased back when it was solicited, I was like, I kind of want to buy this book now.
Yeah, this cover looks like that. There's all of these Adam Hughes covers for all 11 issues are fantastic. This might be one of my favorites, though, because the smoke that's kind of creating the neckline, like that plunging neckline on the dress, that's just like something that's super cool. I mean, we've seen a million Adam Hughes covers, so it's like he draws amazing characters. So this was a really cool creative cover. But I was on issue 9 and I'm like, oh crap, 11. I want to read 11. So I sat down and read 9, 10, and 11. Nice. And 9 and 10 wrapped up this story with Apogee, who is this character that is taking these people in, and I think he's calling them the Olvi, and they're like his worshipers or his followers, and he's giving them a serum that gives them powers, but what happens is the more they use the powers, it burns them out, and then they just like burst into like a puddle of ooze. And Black Widow first found out about this when she met this girl Lucy early in the series, who had these like electrical powers. She was trying to save these people and stop it. And in the previous issue in 10, yeah, that's Lucy on the right. What happened was somebody had developed a serum, and as she was melting down, it was about to like blow. Somebody jabbed her with the serum and it stopped her, but it locked like the power into her arms. So like the process never finished. So now she's stuck with these like electrical powers, and she has this kind of rogue thing where she'll never be able to touch anybody because it's electricity that's in her hands. Oh. She just would burn somebody up. But this opens up with, you know, they're in San Francisco. It's her and Yelena, Lucy, and now you've got Anya Cortez from the heart of the Arana, the heart of the spider, that book. She's the new Spider Girl. And
Girl or Spider Woman?
She's Spider Girl.
She has Dustin Carpenter's outfit. That's
what Yeah, so she has that costume, but she called herself Spider Girl since there already is a Spider Woman right now. But so they formed this thing, it's called the Web, and it's like their hub in San Francisco of, you know, these spider themed people that are also kind of like, you know, Black Ops, you know, you like Black Widow. And they're trying to help San Francisco out and save San Francisco, and Black Widow's still dealing with the emotional problems of the family that she had that was all fake, that was, you know, taken away from her. And they got a tip about this gala where they could find out more about some of this criminal underworld with Apogee that's going on to try and take him down. And they come into contact with these two people called the Twins. And it was really cool because it was, one was really big and buff and the other one was super skinny. And they start fighting. They're like, we want some information. And the Twins are like, yeah, well, we want to kind of fight you first. And they kind of just wanted to fight them just to see if they could fight the Black Widows, and always intended to give them the information. So it's a little slow issue because it's just more action throughout the middle of the book. But the thing that was cool about them was as they're fighting them, like Yelena's getting choked out by this like big broad woman with strong arms, and that woman shrinks down and she's thin, and the other one beefs up. They have a power that allows them to share body mass, so they can transition one's mass to the other instantly. And I thought that was a really cool ability, and it made for some fun fight scenes. But ultimately they get some information, and as they're going away to set up the second issue, it shows the Twins calling someone and they're like, hey, guess what, we're sending someone your way. So they always intended to like stab them in the back in the end. So it was a little bit slower compared to the other arc, but this is part one of a new arc, so I understand it. But I thought those Twins were the highlight of the whole issue. Just, I thought that was a really cool power set to have two people that can share body mass, and kind of like, we can be the same size, or I can be huge and you can be small. Because then if you've got somebody choked down and they're really big and then they shrink down, then they can slip out under your grasp while the other one gets big. So
that's awesome.
This is a book that like everyone should be reading by now. 11 issues in, this is easily, besides that Mark Waid Black Widow run from a few years back, this is easily one of the best Black Widow runs that I've read. And they're putting a family together for her, and I think that's what's making it feel like special. That it's not just her on her own anymore. So
that's good. I kind of dig that idea.
Yeah.
All right. My next book, Eternals, Thanos Rises. So this was interesting, because it's basically like a retelling of why the Eternals don't procreate.
Okay.
And that the one time they decided to procreate, they made Thanos.
Yeah.
So there was like a war that was fought over. So basically, like, the machine that keeps them alive will genetically splice and create the child for them so that there's no actual, like, procreation. Okay. So even if you're called father and mother to a new eternal, you're not really, like, you are, but you're not, I guess, is how they kind of do it. And then, like, Sprite actually makes a comment about how, like she's, like, forever 14 or 16 or whatever. So that was kind of a funny moment in here. But so the faction that said, hey, no, we think we should do this, is fighting because mostly the people that the other Eternals are like, no, if you do this, they're not Eternal. Like, they're not going to be an Eternal. They're just going to be whatever, right? So you actually get to see Thanos' dad go to a planet and meet his future baby mom, who is named Sui San, and not Sui hyphen San, so Susan. Mm-hmm. And they live on Titan. So basically, they were like, "All right, well, let's see if we can do this." So they have the kid and the and they get married. And the, like, one of the Eternals, like his dad basically was like, he's an abomination. And, you know, Thanos wanted to kill his dad. He actually does wake up, back on Earth in the, like, in their chamber that resets them. And he finds out that both him and his wife, who is Thanos' mom, basically get put in solitary confinement for eternity. So that's why Thanos can never avenge his mom, because he doesn't know that his mom is stuck in this eternal prison for eternity. But it was a very good read. It was very wordy. It took a bit to get through, but there's these really good recap pages in it. It's kind of a one shot, but not really. But I really enjoyed it. And I started to think about, when I was reading this, I've been catching up on some other things, and I'm like, son of a bitch, the X-Men are now Eternals. I'm wondering if they're doing that so that they can be like, oh no, it's similar to what the X-Men are doing in the comics right now. It's cool, guys. You know, just think about Krakoa. You're good. just waiting for that. But I enjoyed it. I thought the art was fantastic. I'm really excited for the movie. And I'm curious if they're going to touch on any of this on the movie, because that'd be awesome.
I would imagine that they would. I know Kieran Gillen wrote this one also. That's who's writing the regular Eternals. If you're not caught up on the regular Eternals comic, is this in any way going to mess with it, or is this kind of more of a standalone story?
It's more of a standalone story. It probably helps to at least Wikipedia, like, the main Eternals, so you know who they are. But it's really more the, like, how Thanos was conceived. How his parents met and how he was conceived. That's pretty much
okay.
So, it's pretty good, though.
That's cool.
All right.
I only asked because it looked really good, and I picked it up, and I'm still behind on the regular Eternals because I didn't want to read too much, because I kind of, especially after Shang-Chi, I kind of liked not knowing everything about a character going into a Marvel movie, because it, you know, there's not many times as, like, comic fans and people that work at comic stores that we get to go into watch one of those movies and not know a whole lot, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But
well, that's one of the reasons why they chose some of the the characters that they're doing. But anyway,
probably
continue on.
So Trial of Magneto. This book is very weird because there's definitely either some writing problems or they're laying groundwork for some mental games going on, because there's some things that happen in the beginning of this. Now, to kind of set it up, we know that Scarlet Witch is dead, and everybody's looking at Magneto as possibly the guy that did it. And the book opens up and Magneto's in his home, and he says that he senses Charles there, and he's like, you know, are you going to be here in my home? Like, I know your presence. And it pans out and it's actually Hope and Charles, and they have Magneto out cold on a slab, and they are trying to probe him mentally. And leave that up for 1 second, because I'll tell you why this was interesting. But so they're probing Magneto, and Hope's like, I don't really like this is torture. And you know, Professor X is like, we're trying to get information. And she's like, no, you're trying to get a confession out of him by making him feel like he's at home and that he can just say whatever he wants out loud to himself because no one's around. And this is not something that people should be put through. This is torture. So she doesn't really agree with it. And the whole time that's going on, the Avengers land, and they're here to pick up Wanda's body as an Avenger and take her body back. And this was the part that was originally stuck out to me that was interesting. They land and Cyclops says, hey, this is your first visit. Before we take you to her body, would you like a tour of, you know, Wakanda, since this is your first time? And I thought to myself, this isn't, or Krakoa, yeah. And I thought to myself, this isn't their first time there. They were there for the gala. All of them. Mm. Well, so I know for sure that Cap and Iron Man were both there. So I thought this was interesting that he said that. And then later there's a point where they're talking and Cap's like, oh yeah, well, you know, when I was here for the gala, that was interesting. So there's like either some inconsistencies with the writing, or there's some kind of like mental projection. And since that was the first scene, was Magneto having these things projected into his head, it leads me to believe that some parts of this book are also mental projections that, and we're not told which one they are. You kind of have to look for yourself. But as they're touring, you know, they come across the area where the five resurrect everybody, and they have to mask that so they can't see it, because the world doesn't know that they can resurrect, you know, mutants.
Right.
And then Magneto shows up, and Magneto is in his purple outfit, and he starts to attack the X-Men, and he starts to attack some of the Avengers. And the reason that I thought that was interesting is because that's not an outfit that we've seen him wear since he's been on Krakoa. Mm-hmm. He's been wearing the all white. And then out of nowhere, you see Scarlet Witch show up, and in the bushes is Mystique, and she just says, this should be interesting. So there's some games that are definitely being played, and I'm interested to see if, like, who it is. We know that Mystique is, you know, has a storyline coming up with Inferno, because they kept saying they would revive Destiny if Mystique did these certain things for them. And she's done everything they've asked, but they won't revive Destiny because Moira doesn't want Destiny revived. Moira was burned alive by Pyro at the hands of Destiny and Mystique. So I'm really interested. This book has me asking more questions than the first issue. The first issue was good. It was a little slow, but this one was so all over the place. And then seeing, you know, Scarlet Witch show up and Magneto in a different costume, and then seeing, you know, Charles being dark and dickish, like we've come to know him. I feel like Professor X, when you first start reading comics, was not that way. But if you look at the entire history of Professor X, we're probably more familiar with him just being a dick than anything. And this was kind of that level for me. So I'm interested to see where this book goes. I think it's only a 5-parter. So,
yeah, I noticed that in when I read X-Men 2, they mentioned Wanda's resurrection.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, oh. But then I thought to myself, wait a minute. Didn't that book come out like 3 weeks before or 2 weeks before this book? So it's like,
yeah,
what is going on? Like, so maybe you're right. Maybe things are not lining up the way they should be.
That's what is making me wonder, like, is that on purpose or is that an accident? And if it's on purpose, then that's a really fun thing to do, to make the reader question, like, you know, hey, wait, is this, you're messing up. This shouldn't be like this. Because if you did that on purpose and you're making the reader doubt what they're reading, then I feel like you're taking them somewhere. And I think that's fun and interesting. If it was over the course of a year's worth or whatever, I'd be super pissed and annoyed. But over a 4 or 5 issue miniseries, like, that's fun. Right. Like, I'll do that. So
I feel like this is going to end up being like one big long X-Factor psychic adventure type thing. Like,
yeah,
like, you know, it's some, one of the psychics is just like charged up about this thing and is projecting all this crap. And we're just trying to find out who actually did one thing. And you're going to find out it's like, you know,
that was a part of the other part that was interesting. And I'm glad you brought that up, was X-Factor was actually in this, and there's some struggle between the X-Men want to do this investigation, but X-Factor's kind of the group that does the investigations on this stuff. And there's a little bit of a power struggle back and forth between the two of them of, you know, who's going to take over this. Obviously, X-Factor would not be involved in, you know, psychically grilling Magneto in any way. Right. They would be more involved in the body. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, towards the end of this issue, they show up when that fight's going on. But like I said, I really don't think that what's happening is actually happening. So
they heard the Matrix is being rebooted and decided to.
Yes. Yeah.
soon you're going to get bearded Professor X, and it's going to be fine.
So. Someone shot Polaris and she just put her hand up and stopped all the bullets. But that's just because she can.
Right. So unless it's a weird metal from another planet, then she can.
Yeah.
All right. My last book is Fantastic Four, Life Story number 4, the 90s.
And you've been reading this straight through since it came out, right?
I have.
Okay.
I think I've reviewed every one of them because they are that good. This one was awesome because it's almost entirely from Ben Grimm's point of view. And like, he's like, the 90s, everyone looked like a dock worker. This is great. And they like show him like walking down the street with like a bunch of like grunge guys. It's awesome. But it shows like Tony Stark, like making clean energy and kind of, you know, kills global warming. And then Wakanda's like, hey, we've made a vaccine for this plague called AIDS, and we're just going to give it to the world. And I was like, I always wondered why that like really wasn't a big deal in Marvel books, except for like the one Daredevil book, you know? Like, I thought that was kind of cool. But it shows like Ben and his ex-wife talking a little bit, and then like Franklin's getting married, and then Ben decides he's going to get on like online dating, because that's the thing that started happening in the 90s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how he meets Alicia, and you know, the whole Galactus is coming thing is still a background story.
Literally, cool, as you can see on the cover.
Yeah.
It's literally the
yeah, every single one had a little bit of Galactus in the back. It talks about Ben being in Korea, which was cool, because like you never get to see that. There's this awesome scene from 1996 when Reed wakes up, or Ben wakes Reed up because of the wedding. Oh, by the way, at this point, Susan has left Namor and come back to Reed, just so we know that that's clear.
Okay.
At the end of the last one, she was still with Namor. So Reed's like in bed. He's like a really old man, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he just kind of like wakes up and he kind of touches his face and he's like, ugh, hold on a second. And then he looks like he normally does.
Yeah.
So it's just him morphing his face like that to be younger looking. And I'm just like,
okay,
wow, I never thought about him doing that. But then I also was like, how did he get his hair to go from all white to brown and white? That part I don't get. But Franklin marries, I believe, a Wakandan girl, which is cool. Reed and Sue make up. Ben's still in love. They go out and try to, like, they're like, oh, Galactus is coming. So they fly out. And instead of finding Galactus, they find the Surfer. And Ben's like, I love this girl. I'm going to try to get as much time as I can with her. So he gets a spacesuit on, goes out, and just kicks him off the board. And he's just like, and in true Surfer fashion, he's just like, yeah, whatever, man. Talk to the hand, board to me. And then they're like, oh, crap. So he then flies around the world, goes to the UN, and basically is like, you have 10 years until my master comes. I am 1/1000th of his power, and he will come to destroy you all. You have 10 years. And then, you know, Ben's like, well, crap. So he proposes to Alicia. And then, you know, that's kind of where it ends, going into the into 2000. Like, it ends on New Year's Eve, 1999. And it's very, like, this book's very cool because it's like sort of an anthology, but not, because it's not like, here are things that happened specifically in the 90s in Fantastic Four. It was just, if they would have started in the 60s, or I think it was the 50s, right? 50s,
60s, yeah.
70s, or no, 60s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, yeah. So they started in the 60s, and they're now up into the 90s. So they're actually like 60 years old at this point, right? Like, minimum 60 years old. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. I just think it was crazy that Franklin's got to be, I don't know, mid-20s, and that means Reed had to be like, Reed and Sue have to be like, had to be like 40-ish when they had him. And I'm just like, wow, that's nuts. But Johnny's dead, and it's kind of, but Franklin looks just like him, so it's very cool. I really dig this. The way they're telling the story. I think it's a 6-part series, so there's at least two more to get up to the present.
If they do it the same as Spider-Man, then it should be, because I think Spider-Man went through the 2010s. Spider-Man life story.
Yeah. So the next time will be the aughts, and then the one after that will be the tens.
Yeah.
So it'll be cool. I really enjoy these stories just because it's a kind of a refresher on some cool stuff that actually had happened, but also a good way to kind of reacquaint yourself with it and kind of be like, oh, cool, you kind of cut out all the random shit that, you know, was dumb stories or stuff that no one cared about. So I like it.
Nice.
Good times.
I'm sending you a picture if you want to put it up. I thought it would be cool if I did. I think every week I'm just going to show what I think are my top three covers just based on art every week. And I can't find my Batman Urban Legends in my stack. I was looking through it while you had your picture up, and I can't find it anywhere.
Yeah, I'll put it up real quick.
Okay, so this is one of them. And these are in no order, but these are my top three covers for the week. This is Francesco Mattina. This is Batman Beyond, and this is absolutely disgusting.
Oh, that is sexy. Yeah,
that's awesome. It's like, if you weren't, even if you weren't reading the book, like, you should be picking this issue up just for that cover. So that is my first cover that I thought was amazing. And then what I'll do is, like, next week when I do them, I'll just have digital ones for you for all of them. But the next one would have been the Marauders 24 Betsy Cola variant, which is just awesome. Just gorgeous.
There's a ghost ship in Emma Frost Air.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's a hat.
It's a ghost hat.
Oh.
And then, speaking of Fantastic Four, my last one was from the issue number 35, which they decided to do a $10 issue for issue 35 and call it the 60 years, even though like 20 more issues would get them to 700. And I'm sure they'll do another $10 book then. But this was the Elizabeth Torque cover,
nice,
which I think was just gorgeous. Like, colors are so vibrant, and she has a
reminds me a lot of Jen Bartel.
Yeah,
just not as like not as vibrant.
Yeah,
but I like
it. She has one next week too that will probably be one of my top three. It's a 1 in 50 of from X-Men number 3, I think. It's Jubilee and Wolverine on the cover, but I'll show you that next week. And then I just want to celebrate that this is issue 73, but I just want to celebrate that we only have one more issue left, and then Nick Spencer will be gone from our lives in Spider-Man, and we will no longer have to read Nick Spencer
Spider-Man. Was that the Ron Frenz cover?
No, it was not. This was the Bagley cover. I did get there's a Ron Frenz one for 74, I think, that I have ordered. They're doing like
73 and 74. Might be 74, 75.
I know there's one for 74 because there's like 12 covers because that's the last one of his run.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it'll be like $10 for issue 74 because it's his last issue, and then 75 will be like, oh, it's a milestone issue, and then that'll be $10. But I don't know if you heard like what he did in this run. It was the only thing that he's done that was good was he retconned the Straczynski story where Norman sleeps with Gwen Stacy. So Straczynski had done a story where they found out that Gwen went to London way, way back. The reason she went was because she was pregnant with two kids. And they were Norman Osborn's kids.
Yeah. Right, right.
So it turns out Harry, with the help of Mysterio, was playing a joke. And Norman's like, you mean that didn't really happen? And he's like, Dad, you think like she'd go for a slug like you? Like, get real. And I'm like, okay, I hate retcons for the most part, but I'll take this one because I hated that just like everybody else. But at the same time, it's a little sloppy because they were like, oh, it was fake. We made you think it was real. But there was a whole run of like Spectacular Spider-Man where Gabby and Peter go on like some adventures together, and then she dies in his arms. So there's a lot of like cleaning up to do besides just saying like, oh, that one thing didn't really happen, you know?
Yeah.
Because then who are these other, who are these kids, and who did he go on those adventures with, you know, all that stuff. So, but I'm just happy. Yeah, exactly. That's because that's been going on since like for, oh man, like 12 years, maybe a little longer. So,
jeez. Yeah, I was never excited to know about the, because isn't that where Normie came from? Or no, Normie was the.
Normie is the other... Harry and Liz. So, is it Liz Allen?
Yeah.
That's the one that was
like
kid.
Like a crazy witch or something, right? Like she ended up being
that,
like
that one wasn't Normie. That one was, I forget, I know who you're talking about. She was a different girl and she had like the horns that kind of grew out of her hair. Normie was he was Liz Allen's son way back. There was an issue where there was a big fat Doc Ock or like looking Spider-Man. And it was a kid that was pretending to be Spider-Man because he was like a fanboy of him and wanted to help. And that was way back when I don't remember if the baby ever happened. That was supposed to be another one that was like Norman's baby with this lady.
Okay.
So I don't know if that ever happened either. Norman's just apparently making fake babies all over the place. So, but I'm so excited for that to end.
Well, that was Harry's baby, though. Normie was Harry's baby, though.
Yeah, Normie is Harry's baby. I mean, the one that was from that horned witch lady. I don't remember whose baby that was. So
I thought that was also Harry's, but I could be wrong. That was it might be. Was that like the American Sons storyline?
Yeah, it was around that time with the anti-venom and all that.
Yeah. Like because Norman Osborn was the patriot, and he wanted Harry to be like his sidekick, like almost like a Bucky, and he gave him like a pseudo Iron Man suit that looked really terrible.
If I remember correctly, Harry thought it was his and then found out that it wasn't, that it was his dad's. Something along those lines.
Right.
Yeah.
I just remember the super cute Halloween party at the end where Harry's wearing him on his chest and he's it looks like Dr. Octopus because he has the octopus arms.
Yeah. He was doing his best, like, I'm going to be a real dad kind of thing. But I don't know. I'm ready for this Nick Spencer run to be over. Poop.
I don't know. Like, I don't hate Nick Spencer. I'm not really into Spider-Man anymore. So for me, it's hard to keep doing that.
I look at like the stuff that he wrote and it's like, okay, you did Morning Glories, which was, you know, well received and people probably his best work. But then he did like when Ultimate X-Men was at its crappiest, he comes in and they're like, hey man, there's nowhere to go but up because this book is bad, and he made it worse. And then he did Hydra Cap, which if you're a fan, you're a fan, but most people are not a fan of Hydra Cap. And then he does this Spider-Man run and I'm just like, have you done anything good? Like, you did your independent book. Have you done anything good? And I hate to be so hard because, you know, we have all kinds of cool guests on our show, but I love Spider-Man and you're really...
So if I randomly got you Nick Spencer, you would just shit on him all the time. That's what you're saying.
No, I would be very nice to him. I would be very nice to him. I'm just very bummed out by
your prison. I just want you off my book.
Yes, I just need you off of Spider-Man. Like, go work on some indie stuff.
What if they put somebody... Who's taking over for him? I guess my question.
So it's like, it's going to be like Brand New Day. It's going to be three times a month and there's different creative teams for each storyline. But like there's some really cool like creative teams. So like I think the first one is Kelly Thompson. So right there.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome pick. And they're bringing back Ben Reilly, and Ben Reilly's going to be Spider-Man. So I don't know if there's going to be two or what's going on. There was some things, some imagery that looked like maybe Peter was going to die. So I don't know what's going to happen with that, but seeing Ben Reilly come back and in the costume with like the big black spider like over it looks really cool.
Yeah, but like how are they going to explain Ben coming back now?
I don't know. Like he had his own mini series. Trying to think, or that was Kane that ended up being and Kane. Yeah, Ben Reilly was there, and then Scarlet Spider was Kane, and then maybe it was Kane that died. Who knows? There's so many clones,
It was Ben that you talking about the end of Spider Island, like where they tried to bring back Raven.
Yeah.
That was Ben that died, which is why it didn't work. Why Kraven came back mad.
Oh, yeah, because Ben was the one that had, like, he had that weird, like, Egyptian helmet on. Like, that was, like, it looked like an Egyptian dog. And he was the one that did the whole clone conspiracy thing, right?
Right. And then and then Kane somehow through this ended up healing and looking normal again.
Yeah.
So he ended up being Scarlet Spider out in Houston.
It was in that Ben Reilly series, Kane met somebody that was like death, and she had healed his face.
Oh, right.
She wanted him to be
before,
like...
But that was before the end of Spider Island, though, right?
Yes, yeah. It was before that. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, Ben dies at the end of Spider Island.
Yeah, I'm trying to... I'm just thinking, like, okay.
I mean, he's a clone.
Was it Ben? Like, was it... Yeah,
we're just going to get another fucking clone. but it's I'm like, oh man, we are in the 90s all over again. Good Lord.
Yeah. Trying to see if I have a picture of it, but I don't think I do. So okay, so where are we going next? We're doing
let's talk about What If, because that was quick.
Okay.
And then we'll talk about Why the Last Man.
Okay.
So I didn't really care for this episode. It was kind of meh for me. Like, it was lower tier because it was like, all right, Killmonger's just going to keep, you know, like double agenting everything. And he did the entire time. And I was just like, okay. I thought the coolest part about the whole thing was seeing Shuri as like maybe teenager, early teenager?
Yeah, like 12.
Being that fucking smart. Holy shit, man. So, that was pretty much my take on it. I don't know.
I think for anybody that was like, oh man, I wish they wouldn't have killed Killmonger at the end, because it'd been cool to see, like, in, you know, Black Panther 2, like, what he could do. This kind of maybe answers, like, you know, what would it look like if he was involved in the MCU more beyond, you know, and the answer is he would just keep being Killmonger and backstabbing people, and you know what I mean? I know this doesn't take place after Black Panther 2. I'm just saying people that wanted to see more of his character, he would have just been the same. He just would have been like, this is my mission, you know, I'm going to use whoever I need to use. And it was kind of boring. I think the only part that was really good that was kind of like part where they're on the astral plane.
Yeah.
Was kind of emotional, you know, because.
Yeah, like, that ending, like, hit the end, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, he dies early in the episode, and like the week before we talked about, oh man, we're so glad that they left Black Panther alive in the zombies one, because that would have really sucked and been hard to watch. But then they did kill him in this week's but then getting to see him in the astral plane and still being this like kind of wise guy, kind of like almost like his father, and giving this advice to his, you know, his cousin, it was a little emotional to watch that. But other than that, it was probably the second worst episode. So.
Yeah, it was pretty, I just thought it was very lackluster. Like, it just didn't feel, it moved really fast and was very predictable. And that was kind of the parts I didn't like about it.
So. Yeah, because even when he was seemingly becoming a good guy with Tony, you know, like when he gives up Obadiah, you're like, nope, this is all part of a thing. Like, at no point did you believe that he was turning over and being a good guy, you know?
Right.
So.
And there is no way in hell he would have been able to disable Jarvis to kill Tony Stark. So I was like, yeah, no. At that point, I'm like, okay, this is really fantasy. What if?
Or pick up an entire rocket and throw it when he doesn't have any superpowers.
Right? How light is that thing? Yeah. But Scott and I were kind of talking about the What If series last night after we went to a concert. We were having dinner afterwards. And we were talking about how What If is kind of weird, because like the reason why people get into such an uproar, And we see this whenever they do a Marvel movie or a comic book movie or anything, because people have ingrained so much of that story in their life. Like, before the movies came out, it was the hardcore comic fans being like, hey, like, I've read this story 500 times. I know it front to back. You've just ruined my whole life. And now they throw out the What If, and it's like, I've watched this movie 500 times and you're now telling me that it's going to do this? Like, that's crap. So it's just interesting to hear, like, it's interesting because people can't just take it for what it is and understand that it's not canon. It's just something fun to do.
Yeah.
Because, like, the What If comics started out as the Assistant Editor's Month. Like,
yeah,
you know, it was just like these random things and weird stories. And a lot of them ended up being some of these stories these guys love.
Yeah.
Which is
That's why it doesn't bother me when it's an episode that I don't like, because I take it for that. You know, it's like, if you go and watch a 2-hour movie and you hate it and it's canon, you're like, oh man, this sucks. I got to wait how many months for the next movie or whatever. Or even if you're watching something like Loki and there's an episode in there that's bad and this is all has ramifications to the entire universe, then you're kind of bummed. But like when you're talking about a cartoon that's a half hour and it's just these little offshoots and little twists, if it's bad, I can move past it really quick. It doesn't upset me that much. You know, right. I'm not like, oh man, I've waited so long for this. It's a half hour cartoon. It's like if I was watching X-Men back in the day and there was, you know, a crappy episode one week, whatever, I'll watch it next Friday and see what the next episode's like, right. You know?
And,
so,
yeah, and you know, and the even bigger thing to think about is like, if you put Star Wars into that same pedestal that, or mm-hmm. box we're talking, right? Like, there's the people who, and we've seen it actually happen twice, right? So you've had the people who loved the original trilogy, and then the prequels came out, and they all, you know, dogged on the prequels. And then eventually, they were like, all right, now we've seen the prequels enough to where it's not so bad. And then the sequels come out, and then the sequels, they're like, what the hell is this? And, like, you're just kind of like, dude, you have to just kind of take it, like, you're not in control of this. This isn't your, you're not in the yeah. driver's seat, man. Somebody else has the controls the radio, you know?
Yeah.
And that's just how they have to deal with it. And I just think it's interesting sometimes when people freak out too much. I love that we can have conversations about things like that. Yeah. I just hate it when people are like, no, my way or the highway. I'm just like, cool, man, just don't watch it anymore and just leave me enjoying it because it's fine. I don't care. You know, so
yeah, because even like this episode, which I didn't like when I say it was the second worst one, like it's still, I still wasn't like, oh man, I wish I wouldn't have spent a half hour watching that. Like the animation is still good. It's still cool to see like the voice actors come back and play those roles. There was some funny moments. So it still had a little bit of like the heart that Marvel movies, you know, have. So, you know, I'm looking forward to like if this really turns out to be a big success, that to see how far this goes. Like, will they open it up even more? Will they get crazy? Will you see things like Guardians of the Galaxy? What if the Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, met Luke Skywalker? You know, will you see like, or will they keep it strictly to like the films, or will it get like really crazy? So. Because, you know, if they're doing these, they only have, you know, they have the films to work with. So do you stay within that realm of the films, or do you break out a little bit more, you know?
Right. I'm kind of curious to see what they do with it too. Cause like, do they hit the TV show stuff, and like a season two going to be all the TV show stuff? Like,
yeah.
You know, cause right now they pretty much, they've hit, what, films from first three phases, right?
Yeah. Like, what if Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was good past season two? You know?
Right? Or, like, what if Dolph Lundgren stayed the Punisher? Like,
yeah, that would be awesome. Yeah. That would be an amazing one.
How about
Thomas
this?
Jane?
Guys, so when we're we would love for you guys to post in either in our Facebook or on here, what is the most ridiculous MCU or Marvel, we'll call it Marvel live action film mm-hmm. or TV show, what if episode would you want to see? It could be the most ridiculous thing ever. Like I think watching a, like having Dolph Lundgren have stayed the Punisher throughout all of it would have been the best. Like,
yeah,
that'd have been hilariously bad. Or like, you know, what if the Johnny Blaze from the Ghost Rider second movie ended up becoming like an actual Ghost Rider.
What if all three Punishers, Dolph Lundgren, Thomas Jane, and John Bernthal, what if they all met?
And Ray Stevenson.
Who would? Yeah, Ray Stevenson. Yeah, I sort of on purpose.
I mean, technically, he's now of the three movies, that's my favorite one.
Really?
Because it's the most over the comic book
Travolta.
Yeah, because it's the most comic book kindish movie. Although the Travolta one had a lot of like Welcome Back, Frank. I really like Warzone because I thought it felt the most Punisher of the three movies.
I can understand one was that.
Pretty, like
it wasn't as gritty, but like it was as far as like the look of it, but it was still kind of brutal.
There was definitely moments where I was like, "Holy crap!"
Especially the final fight. You know, when he goes through and he gives his son like the grenade with the string, and he's like, "Your arm's gonna get tired eventually." And then he just walking down, he's like, "You already killed one of your sons." And then boom, he's like, "Make that two."
I haven't watched those movies in a long time though, so I may change my opinion.
Yeah.
All right. Shifting gears. But seriously though, post what you want, because that would be a lot.
Yeah, we
want
to see those. And I'll put a post up too on the page for anybody that's watching this late or didn't get in because of the early time.
Marvin. Some more Hoff is Fury. Boom. Yeah. I am in with that, buddy.
let's make that a thing for next week that we'll have, you know, people can post their things, and then maybe we'll just like fan out over some of the different ideas that people post.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Good okay.
That, guys. That'd be a lot of fun.
You have your assignment, right, so Thursday Warriors.
Shifting gears to Why the Last Man. So did you end up like reading any of the book yet? Because I know you said
I never read any of the books. I wanted to go in and watch the show blind because I like Brian K. Vaughan, and I wanted to see, you know, how I felt about it. So,
okay. So, as someone who's never read the books, what's your take on the first? You watched the first three, two, right?
I watched the first two. I think it did kind of like similar to like what you would see from like Walking Dead, where you have like this kind of slow episode and then a little bit of action and like a kind of like bam moment at the end to kind of pull you in for the next episode. If these characters were kind of written out and developed like this in the comics, it shows that Brian K. Vaughan is one of the stronger writers as far as handling multiple characters, because it just reminds me of like you know, when you read Runaways wasn't just like, here's one character, and over the course, you're going to meet all it was a lot of characters right off the bat, and they were developed very well, and you were interested in most of them, if not all of them. It was the same thing in this. Like, even though it started a little bit slow with like breaking into the virus, it's like, here's this character, here's the president, here's was it the congresswoman, Diane Lane? She's congresswoman.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, her daughter, and all these characters that you're kind of meeting and reasons why you're going to want to follow them in this, you know, world where all the guys are going to die. So I thought that was really interesting. I thought the moment at the end of the first episode was like, okay, now I definitely want to come back and watch the second episode. And then the second episode got even stronger, especially the arc with Sarah. You know, meeting her and her arc, was more interested in her in the second episode than I was in the first episode. But overall, like, you know, when I first watched it, maybe the first 20 minutes of the show, besides, you know, meeting the characters, I was like, this is going a little slower than I thought. And then it really picked up, and, you know, into the second episode, I thought was even better. So,
yeah, I really thought that the first episode almost mirrored the first couple issues of the book. Like,
yeah,
it really set the tone to what the book is. I like that they did a great job of connecting those dots. So so that you're like, oh, this focuses around the one dude who survived, his sister, his mom, his monkey, and the person from the Culper ring that has to go in and find him, which in the comics, I don't think they ever actually gave her a name. She uses the name Sarah, but I think they just call her 533 in the comics.
Yeah, she just went by CR 530, or she said CR 533 or 535. Yeah.
Yeah, Culper Ring 533.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, if you guys are interested in Culper Ring stuff, I really recommend watching Turn America's Spies. It was an AMC show, and it actually was the story of the Culper Ring. It was very good. Anyway, I just, like, man, the way that they portrayed the virus, like, just being that fast was, like, crazy. I was like, holy shit, like, this is kind of nuts. There's some, if they follow the story, which I think they will, there's some cool stuff that's going to come up with his sister, and that's why they can't find her right now. You're going to see some cool stuff come up with her. I think the guy that they got to play, I can't think of his actual first name. The guy who plays Y, he actually like I think he's very good for that role. He's a little more neurotic than I expected the character to be in person than he was in the books.
Yorick,
that's it. I was like, I know it begins with a Y, but there's a lot of really cool stuff. That book went for, what, like 80 issues? Something like
that? I think around 80, 82 issues.
So it's got potential to do like 3 or 4 seasons. This also has like, this is where I'm going to go into the deep nerd zone, right? So it has a bit of a vibe of like 12 Monkeys, like the sci-fi show, where the way they are portraying like the post-apocalyptic stuff kind of gets that vibe, which I really enjoy.
Would you just call it One Monkey then?
One Monkey.
Okay.
The Last Monkey. We'll just call it Last Monkey.
The Last Monkey.
Ampersand The Last Monkey. It's very, very good. But you can watch the first 4 episodes right now. The first 3 dropped on last Wednesday, right?
Yeah, and then somebody told me the 4th one was out now. So I think it came out maybe yesterday.
Okay. So it's very good. I saw the last season of Lucifer and I blazed through that, and that was very good too, if you guys are into that on Netflix. So the last 2 episodes, man, just all the feels. Holy crap. So, like, just heart-wrenching. Like, oh my god, I feel so bad. So. But, anyway, that's pretty much all I got, unless you have anything more on why.
I'm not a moron, first of all. Anything more on. Okay, I'm sorry. There was some rumors that Marvel is now looking into production of a live action Marvel Zombie series.
I have a better rumor for you.
Okay, go ahead. I didn't know it was a contest.
No. Finish your thought on that first.
No, it was, I just wanted to bring that up, just that they talked about that, and that I thought that would be cool if that actually does happen.
So I may just do this in full spoiler version and then tell you about it later. Okay. Like when we're done being on live. So there is a rumor about the post-credit scene in Venom 2 that came out of the screeners last night.
I read them.
And I was like, I don't think so.
We'll see. That that movie has me concerned a little bit because some of the reviews were like, oh, it's just what you would think. It's like just pure mayhem. And I'm like, that's a really weird word to use for a movie that has carnage. I feel like it's already giving you the word to use. But anyways, so it's 90 minutes and it's PG-13. I've read books where carnage has thrown a baby out a window and I'm going to watch a PG-13 version that's 90 minutes long. The first one wasn't super great. It was 90s cheesy. It had some potential. I was really hoping that this carnage thing could really take it on, especially when you're talking about Shriek's going to be in the movie. So that's somebody that's going to take some screen time away from Carnage and Venom, and it's only 90 minutes. So I have some serious concerns about how good this movie is going to be. But some of the reviews were saying that it was a lot of fun. So we'll see.
I mean, I'm curious. I'm not curiously optimistic. I didn't think the first one was very good.
But yeah, it really.
Yeah. Like, I will probably matinee this.
Oh, for sure. This will be
pay full price for that.
So. No, I don't think I would either. But I'll still watch it. I guess when I think about it, like, before Donny Cates, how many really good, I think Cullen Bunn did the one with Declan. How many really good Venom stories, symbiote stories, did we really get? You know?
Right.
So if the movies are cheesy and a little, like, goofy, I guess it's following. But after seeing what Donny Cates has done, it's like, oh, that's what good Venom stuff could be like, you know? So... wish they would just call that guy up and be like, hey, got any ideas? Want to help us out?
Right. Well, it's a thing. We'll see how it goes. So. But, all right, yeah. We ran over a little bit long.
That's all right.
Guys. We're waking up. It's 2:30, almost 2:30. We're waking up.
I'm up now. I'm ready for my nap.
Well, thanks, everybody, for watching. Make sure you guys... share, subscribe, like, comment. All that stuff helps us get seen by more people on the YouTube, yep. Which then helps us grow the chat, which then helps us grow our audience, which makes us keep wanting to do this more often. Even, yep. I'll be honest, I'd do this if there was just one person. It'd be wrong.
I can, but yeah. You know.
Just a personal
show. Don't forget your homework for next week. We want you to come up with your craziest idea for what if that you would want to see. It doesn't have to be confined to just the movies. So
it doesn't have to be confined to the MCU.
To the MCU, yeah. Because so you could do like the X-Men movies. You could do Deadpool. You want it
to be a Marvel property, but not
what
is considered the MCU.
Yeah.
So what if Juggernaut was not the Juggernaut bitch.
yeah.
What if the Juggernaut didn't suck in X-Men 3?
What if they got a real actor to play him instead of a soccer player?
What if Eric Dane's Multiple Man had a better, had more only. Screen time?
Yeah, so, if only. What a waste.
I love that. I know. Yeah. I was like, seriously? You used him for one scene. Anyway, I digress for making this longer. Thanks so much, Thursday Warriors. We'll see you next Thursday week
Warriors.
At our regular time.
Peace.
Bye-bye.